Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 30. On this episode, we talk 22 Jump Street, the Phil Lord and Chris Miller movie. You may recognize them from such great films as Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and most recently, The Lego Movie, which was great. In this movie, we have Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum, who comprise a pretty surprising duo in this follow-up to their also surprise hit 21 Jump Street. This falls into that category we like to call like the summer blockbuster comedy, or blockomedy, or somedy, or combuster. I don't know. Anyway, there's this underrepresented thing so far, or this underrepresented category on the podcast to this point of like these huge obvious comedies, and people are going to see them by the millions. So we thought we should get one, and this was actually a really great one because there's a lot to talk about. So joining me was Mark Wingerter, who is a regular on the show. He writes for Real World Theology and does lots of other cool stuff on his own. And someone who's almost in danger of becoming a regular is J.R. Forresteros from the Origami Elephants podcast and also the Story Men. We talk about our favorite comedies, just things that we've just fallen off the wagon laughing so hard at, things that somehow don't sit right, even though they seem like they're the same genre. And then in this particular movie, there's stuff we didn't even get to about purpose and being. We mostly end up talking about male friendships and their underrepresentation or misrepresentation in cinema. So I think you're really going to enjoy this one. So here it is, episode 30, 22 Jump Street and Male Friendships. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless.
I think there's a perception problem with our culture about film still, even though there's a lot of like accessibility for filmmakers to make pretty much anything and make it look good and make it enjoyable and entertaining, and it's so easily accessible now on the internet and everything. Like, it's just anybody can make a really good film, but we still have this like, well, I'm gonna go see Transformers because it's Transformers and it's big. But you know, I mean, like, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, there's a market for that, and that, you know, without that we wouldn't have movies like Avengers. But you know, it's like, there's so many good films out there, and people are like, well, it's just the same whole kind of thing. It's like, yes, but did they do it well? And, you know, who did it? And what's exciting about it? And
well, is this people just lying to themselves?
Right.
Because if people really valued originality, then why did Edge of Tomorrow tank?
Right.
Yeah. You
know? Like, that's what kills me when people complain about things. Like, they're like, I just didn't like it because it wasn't original, or it wasn't, like, this thing, or this, and, like, You have opportunities to go see these things, and you choose not to still. So you say you want these things, but your dollar says you want something else.
Absolutely.
And that's something that we'll probably be, I'm hoping we're going to address tonight.
Right. Plus, it's kind of like, what is pulling people in? Because, you know, that with Edge of Tomorrow not doing well, like, Tom Cruise is like, you know, his star is fading out, is what they're saying, you know, and it's like, you know, he can't draw people to the movies anymore. You know, and there's still kind of that, like, some people go see movies for certain actors and stuff, but they really don't anymore. It doesn't matter because it's like, you didn't really know much of the people. You didn't know Chris Hemsworth when he played Thor, but everybody went to see Thor.
Yeah.
You know, nobody really cared about, what's his, Chris Evans before he played Captain America.
Yeah.
And now, but they go see Captain America. So it's like, you know, what is it that's drawing people? Is it just the bigger the better? It's kind of what it seems like. But then you have a movie like Edge of Tomorrow that is really big and really great and really epic and really exciting, and it doesn't do well.
Well, not only that, but I'm pretty sure another movie that's not going to make any money is Snowpiercer.
Right.
Given, I think part of that is because of there's zero marketing with it now because it's taken so long to come out. And have you seen it yet, JR?
We're going tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, like, I really, really enjoyed it. Have you seen it yet, Mark?
No.
Still okay. We're gonna podcast on it, but we're not for another couple weeks. But it's like this original thing, and I don't think anyone's gonna go see it. I think people are gonna completely miss out.
Right.
And
well, stuff like The Signal, you know, is another one that's like it's supposed to be a really great original sci-fi movie. It looks new. It looks exciting, and you'll hear a thing about it. You know, except. You know, like a banner on the side of like firstshowing.net or something. But like, Chef was another one that was an indie movie that's original and it's done pretty well. I mean, it stayed in the top 10 for a few weeks and it's made about $25 million.
Yeah, and it came out during a time where like it probably could have hung around for a couple weeks because there wasn't a ton of stuff.
Right. But, you know. I feel like there was something recently, like an indie movie that did really, really well and made a lot of money, but it's in this summer season.
Oh, was it The Hunger Games?
I think so, yeah.
An indie movie.
That's a small indie film.
Small little budget.
No, I think you're right.
There's something. See, now but I have to look at being in the summer movie season, it's hard to remember, but, you know.
Well, I mean... Well, that's the thing. Like, well, I guess Fault in Our Stars wasn't an independent film. It made a chunk of change, but it made it, like, all the first weekend. Like, no one was like, I saw this movie. It was so great. Everyone's got to keep going and seeing it.
Yeah.
Everyone, right. You know.
It was like the entire fan base went.
Yeah. If you read the book, you went and saw it opening night or the day after.
Yeah. It made a ton of money, and then it was done.
Yeah.
And understandably so. God, I don't... I mean, I'm looking through this list, and I don't see... Well,
that's like that. That's why I linked that article about Edge of Tomorrow on my Twitter last week, towards the end of the week. Really great article about, you don't understand, you want to go see Transformers and everything, and that's fine, but what you really are looking for is a really exciting action movie with really great CGI and really exciting plot and well-developed characters. That's not Transformers, that's Edge of Tomorrow. And if you don't go see Edge of Tomorrow, we're not going to get movies like Edge of Tomorrow anymore. We're going to get just the same old schlock from Michael Bay.
Transformers 18.
Yeah.
Well, I think somehow not all the Autobots are dead yet.
Yeah. You just keep bringing more. Wait, you weren't here before, but you said you came here before. What's going on with that?
I understand.
Yeah. It's kind of ironic because Mark was on the show that we did at the end of last summer kind of talking about why people go to see summer movies. And JR, you were on when we actually kind of had our Oscar aside talk. Mm-hmm. And I think both those things are almost 100% driven by marketing.
Yeah.
And it's impressive. Ever since Edge of Tomorrow has kind of tanked. Well, I wouldn't say completely tanked, but for the budget, it's not done very well. I've kind of polled people because, you know, people come up, they're like, hey, I know you do a thing about movies. Let's see what's going on. What should I go see?
Right.
And I'm like, Edge of Tomorrow. They're like, oh, well, I thought about going to see it, but then I watched the... I can't take when you message me, JR. I guess we're so distracted. when they saw the trailer, they saw the preview, it looked like the marketing was like, hey, it's just another Tom Cruise sci-fi movie that may or may not be original. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, oh, it just looked, I couldn't distinguish it from all the other Tom Cruise movies. And I was like, well, that's unfortunate. And that marketing basically, I guess, doomed it. Now, given, I thought the trailer kind of looked interesting. And then,
yeah, I was actually had the opposite reaction. When I saw Tom Cruise come on the screen, I was like, I'm out. And then the trailer went, and I was like, oh, I'm back in. This looks really good.
Well, but that's the thing, JR. So I feel like you've told me before that you will go see just about anything because when you guys go see it, you can see it for pretty cheap.
That's accurate.
But you're a movie going dude, man. You say like I'm going to see that tomorrow. I saw these two movies this weekend.
I know I'm jealous.
Totally jealous.
But you know, what are people's motivations for seeing movies? Like, what is it? Just because movies are expensive, and they don't want to? You know, they're like, well, at least I know what kind of crap I'm going to get if I go see Transformers. Or, you know,
I think a lot of people just like I've talked to a few other people that saw Transformers and they genuinely enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, and then I start asking them questions about it, things that confused me, and they're like, yeah, I don't know. That didn't really bother me. And I'm like, okay.
Okay.
You know, I think for a lot of people, films, especially big summer blockbusters, are kind of an escapism. They want to go shut off their brain and not have to think too much. And a film like Edge of Tomorrow, as fun and awesome as it was, it makes you think a little bit. Like, you have to pay attention. You have to follow how he's, you know, repeating the day over and over and changing things. And I thought the film was very well done. Like, you have to pay attention if you want it to make sense and understand what's going on at the end. On the other hand, no matter how hard you pay attention in a Michael Bay film, I shouldn't say that, in a Transformers film, it's not going to make sense. You should just shut your brain off and not try, like, just be like, pretty colors and explosions and sword fights with robots, woo, you know. And some people just want that. Some people don't want to have to think. They don't want to, they don't go to a movie to be engaged. Did you guys see The Gray?
Yeah.
With Liam Neeson? Mm-hmm. I think that's the same thing. Like, that was a really heady film.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were thinking it's just Taken with Wolves.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not what it is. Like, it's like profoundly philosophical and thoughtful, and the whole ending of the film is designed to disturb you on, like, a philosophical existential level. And people were like, I didn't come to see Liam Neeson fight wolves for that. Like, I came to see Liam Neeson fight wolves, period, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of people didn't like that movie, even though it was, like, phenomenal. One of the best films of 2011 or whatever it was that came out.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah, that's definitely... I think that's where we're at right now, because, I mean, that's why horror movies are always the top of the box office every week that they open, because it's just like people go to get... You know, they want thrills, they want feeling, which... It's fine. It's great. But you also have to hope, I guess, that it opens it up for smart movies, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, The Gray or Edge of Tomorrow or whatever.
Cerebral movies.
Yeah. Going kind of into what we're about to talk about, like, that's why I don't understand, even though I enjoy it, I don't understand why comedies do so well right now, especially the R-rated comedies. But I guess it's just people are going for that shock value, I guess. You know, like, I would never have thought, like, a movie like Neighbors with Seth Rogen was going to do well, even though I really want to see it, and I hear it's funny, and I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's really great, and people are saying it's great, but it did really well, like, it's just because people are really into R-rated comedies right now. So we get a lot of schlock, too, like, you know.
JR says it is great.
It is great.
He could interrupt you and tell you it is great.
feel free to interrupt me.
No, I want to give you time to finish. The other thing I think that we have to keep into account, particularly the difference between a film like Edge of Tomorrow and a film like Neighbors or 22 Jump Street, is that there are, I don't know, there's a blockbuster coming out every other week this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a person who maybe gets to go to the movies once a month, by the time they get around to going to the movies, they've got tons to choose from.
Yeah.
And it's not like there's one or two blockbusters and you're going to be able to go see them both. They cannot produce 10 movies in 15 weeks that all cost $150 million and expect that all of them are going to make their money back.
Right.
There's no way. And so you're starting to see these studios get, I think we're going to see, even, you know, you've seen the schedules for 2015 and 2016 and 2017 already, which is crazy, right? That we know these release dates that far out. But I think movie studios are all going to be looking for the next Marvel franchise, looking for the next Harry Potter franchise, looking for the next Transformers franchise. And independent, well, not independent, but solo movies like Edge of Tomorrow, even the Planet of the Apes movie, though it's kind of franchisey, I'm worried for it. I don't think they're going to do as well because... you know, Disney can spend $1 billion on each Marvel film to market it, and then know they're going to make that money back. You know, Edge of Tomorrow was a huge risk. So I think is Dawn of Planet of the Apes, or Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be the movie of the summer.
It certainly looks like it.
Oh man, and it's, I'm afraid it's going to horribly underperform, which is going to be a crime against humanity. Probably. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, in all the early reviews of Dawn say that, you know, it's like a this really amazing movie that's dressed as a summer movie, or it's a, you know, it's like a, being an imposter.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like what we saw with The Dark Knight, right? Like, that wasn't really a superhero film. It was like this, like, super complex crime drama that just happened to have a dude dressed up like Batman in it.
Yeah. Well, it had Batman dressed up like Batman.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
And a guy is a clown. A suggested clown.
Right.
Well, okay, so that transitions us, I think, and we are going to be talking about not necessarily sci-fi, because it, and we're going to be talking about comedy.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really talked about a comedy per se on this podcast. And I think that in and of itself is kind of interesting, because does it say that comedies typically don't have anything to say, or don't have anything that they're kind of teaching us? Or is it just because, maybe, I guess, since the messages might be woven into jokes, that we just don't care? But in this particular case, whether it is or not, mm-hmm. 22 Jump Street, which is, like I said, what we'll be covering, has made tons of money. It's now, when we're, as we're recording this, in its fourth week,
yeah.
and it's still hanging on, I think, like in the fourth or fifth spot.
Mm-hmm.
And that could say something about the quality of blockbusters that have come out since. It could say something about maybe there's something there.
Yeah.
Or when we talked earlier, why do people go see these movies? You know, JR said, you know, there's so many things to choose from. Why would people, if they could only choose one movie, like, that they go see a month, why would they choose 22 Jump Street over something else?
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who don't know, I don't know why you wouldn't know, because you're listening to this intentionally. I would assume. In 22 Jump Street, we pick up, after the success of 21 Jump Street, where Jinko and Schmidt, Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill, they get a promotion across the street to 22 Jump Street. This time, their case takes them to college, where a dangerous new synthetic drug named Wi-Fi has claimed the life of a student. The pair must track down the dealer and stop the drug going viral, or spreading beyond the campus to the rest of the U.S. So it's basically set up with the tagline, you know, just like the last time.
And we, exactly like the last time.
You know, so we get that over and over and over again. So I want to ask if you guys enjoyed the film. I'm pretty sure I know that you enjoyed the film. But I guess I want to caveat that with, why are people going to see this movie? Like, why do people go see blockbuster comedies when they can see anything, especially during the summer? JR.
Yeah, go for it, JR.
Well, I mean, who doesn't like to laugh?
Yeah,
right. You know? And when did you guys see 21 Jump Street?
I saw it not too long ago.
I was late to the party. I didn't see 21 until... I knew it was really funny. It was one of those movies that was on my list, and I just never got around to it. And, well, I didn't... Actually, when I saw it in the theater, I was like...
Oh,
I didn't realize how...
No.
When I saw it was in the theaters, coming to the theaters, I didn't realize it was going to be as smart as it was. It just looked like another, we're just going to throw these stars into this remake of this TV show. And so once I heard it was really smart, I wanted to see it. So, but then I saw it like a few weeks ago.
And same with you, Mikey. You saw it pretty recently.
Yeah, I will say I saw it a couple months ago, because we had so many people tell us that it was really, really funny. And with... I have a hesitation at some of these comedies, like American comedies, because I feel like most of them just use shock humor, and I don't like... I mean, it's not really funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
Shock humor isn't, but clever comedies are, which is why on this podcast we did The World's End.
Right.
But at the mm-hmm. same time, I think there's a really stark difference between The World's End and a 22 Jump Street.
Unquestionably,
you know, and that's why The World's End made it, and we almost didn't think that we did a comedy, because... You know, Edgar Wright's movies are so smart, you almost forget that it's like it's classified as a comedy.
Right.
So enough people told us that 21 Jump Street was so funny. So Laura and I actually, we watched it like, I think 2 months ago, maybe, because
mm-hmm.
we knew we were hypothetically going to go see 22. So, but I'm guessing you were on the bandwagon from the beginning.
Well, no. So when $5 is just too much to pay for a movie in Dayton, there is a dollar theater that on Tuesdays has $1.50 movies. And so a couple of buddies and I had nothing to do on Tuesday night. We were like, let's go to the dollar theater. Something will be there that we want to see. And there's nothing there that we either hadn't already seen or that we had any interest in seeing. And 21 Jump Street was about to start. And we were like, I mean, you know, how bad can it be for $1.50? Right.
Yeah.
So we sat down, missed the, we got in there after the whole opening sequence. And, like where they're in the park and everything.
Yeah.
And so we kind of sat down and just dove into it, And, like, we were just blown away. I mean, we were dying laughing, you know. And, of course, like, the thing that really connected with me was the meta humor, you know, where Nick Offerman, Sargent, is saying, you know, oh, they don't have any creativity anymore, so they just take old stuff and dust it off and hope we won't notice. And, you know, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is so smart. And I was not aware at the time that it was Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who were the directors, who also had done Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Mm-hmm. They've since now done the Lego Movie, which is one of the best movies, like, probably ever. and so, like, it was like, clearly these guys just, they have a totally unique sensibility, and they can make really, really smart films. And so I think part of the reason people are coming to see 22 Jump Street specifically is because the first one was so unexpectedly good.
Yeah.
And so you have the same thought process. You're like, there's no way a sequel to 21 Jump Street could be good. But you're like, but that's what I thought when I said about a reboot of 21 Jump Street. Like, there's no way that could be good. And it was hilarious. So, you know, let's go check. I mean, I was from the second the first film ended, I was like, can't wait to see the sequel. You know, I mean, I knew that I was going to go and I was going to like it. And man, it was like, I don't know. I thought it was great. So.
Well, I think the one of the best parts about 22 Jump Street is it actually addressed my fear of going to see 22 Jump Street. Because I saw 21 and I was like, oh, okay, I can see why so many people like this movie. Yeah. I thought it was pretty funny.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's no Dodgeball, but like. It's pretty funny. It had its moments, and you know, one of the reasons I didn't go see the first one is because I had no particular love for Channing Tatum or Jonah Hill at the time, and so I was like, okay, but I was like, man, if I consider this above average funniness, mm-hmm. you know, worth seeing, but the sequel is just going to be a lot of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to go see a lot of the same thing because I don't want it to be a letdown. So.
So the film comes right out and calls that out.
Yeah, so the film, you know, comes right out and says,
oh, yeah.
The problem with making the sequel is it's going to be just like the first one.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then makes fun of it. But so while we're switching to 22 Jump Street, Jared, I'm assuming you love 22 Jump Street.
Yeah, I mean, so I've had to be cautious because I have a tendency to oversell things.
Lego Movie, the best movie ever, man.
Yeah, a lot of people have been like, is it awesome? And I'm like, well, yeah, look, like part of the reason 21 Jump Street was so awesome is because when you sat down to watch that, you're like, this movie is going to be dumb. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't. Like, it was surprised. I've actually compared it, and I will defend this comparison, to the first Matrix film. Like, where people were sitting down there like, I have no idea what this movie's about. It's super weird. Like, whatever. All you had was this really opaque preview that didn't tell you anything about the movie. It just told you it was going to be cool.
Yeah.
And then it totally blew your mind. And you're like, I didn't know what to expect, but it certainly was not that. You know? And 21 Jump Street had that same kind of thing. You're like, there was in no universe that I expect this movie to be interesting or smart or funny, and it was all of those things. And so you don't get that with a sequel. You know, the second two Matrix movies, everyone's like, well, they didn't like push the envelope and reinvent everything like the first one did. And I was like, well, of course not, because they're in the same universe. Like, they can't, you know.
Yeah.
And same with 22 Jump Street. Like, it's not surprising that it was funny. It's not surprising that it was hilarious and smart and all those things, because that's what the first one was. So,
yeah, that's
you
really
don't have that, but you, it, yeah, so I liked it.
Yeah,
that's
a really interesting comparison. I totally agree. Like, that's, you know, that's why, like, enjoyed the Matrix sequels, because they were in the Matrix world, but they were nowhere near as good of a film, and it, you know, didn't blow my mind, but I didn't go in expecting my mind to be completely blown.
I kind of did.
Right.
Really? Well.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people did. A lot of people were, like, expecting the same, like, earth-shattering cinema culture-changing epic that the Matrix gave them, and I don't think that was a realistic expectation, because it's in the same universe that they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I look back on it and I remember, like, my roommate and I, like, watching the trailer for the second Matrix and, like, coming up with all these theories about, like, what it meant and what it could be. And, like, we had all these, like, different stories made up for the Matrix. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think, That's more for the Matrix. Like, you could, it's easier to, like, get lost in that with the Matrix. But with 22, I mean, I feel like you know what you're getting going in. Versus, I mean, you know, 21 was a surprise. which is great. So you didn't have that factor, but it's, they also, like, I think for the writers and, you know, for the directors and the, even the stars, like, for the second one, they were like, wait, wait, that worked, you know, the first time? Well, heck, let's just have a bunch of fun with it.
Do
this time.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah. No, just,
do exactly, I mean, the same thing.
Let's do what we did last time, but just have a, have free reign with it. It's great.
Well, I would take it a step further and say, not, one of the reasons I did like 21 Jump Street was because my expectations were incredibly low.
Right.
You know, I was like, I skipped on this when it came to the theater for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, sure, a lot of people have told me that it's, you know, really funny and they enjoyed it, but, you know, they're not as classy and film-going criticky as I am. Yeah. So, you know, their plebeian tastes
sure
might, you know, meet the medium bar. So you know, so I go into it, and my expectations were pretty low still, even with the recommendations, and so it did surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And then 22, in this case, I felt like the same thing. I was like, it's going to be a sequel, it's going to be the same thing, so my bar was really low again.
Right.
And it did help that they specifically addressed most people's hesitation to it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, so it was super funny. Mm-hmm. It did help. But I do wonder, like, when I was, like, reviewing it and, you know, doing a quick write-up, I was, like, and trying to give it, like, a star rating in my head so I could, you know, get it in line with where I felt it came out with all the other movies this year so far. I was like, did I just like it a lot more because my expectations were too low?
But, yeah, you know, I think that's a fair question. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, and I think it's, especially when you're dealing with any kind of sequel, it's hard to leave expectations at the door. More so with just an original, like, oh, I'm not really expecting anything with 21, but 22, you know what you're expecting. And that's pretty much just like any sequel, or really, I mean, any movie, can it deliver on the expectations it has delivered to you through the trailer? And 22 Jump Street did that. And I really liked it, and I thought it was, it had some moments where it was like they were forcing some humor, but like overall, it just had a really good sense of itself, and it was really, mm-hmm, self-aware. And so, you know, you knew that from the first one that they were going to do that with this one. So you go into it with that kind of relaxed, okay, we get it. We're in on the joke now. And so we can just kind of flow with it and just play with it. So just have fun with it, guys. I'm just going to be entertained by watching you two, because you guys, you know, Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum work really well together, apparently. Mm-hmm. So, but going back to kind of the caveat.
Schwarzenegger and DeVito.
Yeah, right. They're twins. but, yeah, no, it's like, and oddly enough, that's a good comparison, because you've got the meathead kind of muscly guy and then the kind of short, weird comedy guy. Anyway. But going back to the caveat of, like, why do people go see these kinds of movies? And I think it's really because with the R rating and with a silly premise like we're going to remake an 80s TV show, if you do it right, like they did, it's like a ticket to just freedom of, like, expression in your comedy. I mean, they can, with an R rating, it's like you can just do anything, and it can be just riotous and laugh out loud. It can be, you know, obviously vulgar, and I think that's a really popular type of humor right now. Mm-hmm. So I think when you have a free reign, like a ticket to ride on an R-rated movie with a really good two, like, leads that are play really well together and a ridiculous premise that they know that they're gonna, I mean, it's hard to mess that up.
Well, there are movies that, there are what I would call blockbuster comedies, summer right. movie comedies,
right.
you know, and they're the ones that typically only come out during the summer. You know, there's comedies that obviously come out all year, but the ones that get the money, the ones that are, you know, really market-driven, usually have the biggest stars of whatever time period it comes out, they come out in the summer. But just because it comes out in the summer doesn't mean it's going to be successful. And you've already mentioned Neighbors, which, you know, we haven't talked about Neighbors on this show, but it mm-hmm. did get really good reviews. It made a surprisingly large amount of money, and so has 22 Jump Street. But we were just talking before we started recording that Tammy came out this past weekend.
Yeah.
And Tammy does not look like it was going to do very well. And JR just reminded me that A Million Ways to Die in the West also did not do very well.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a given just because you make a blockbuster movie or blockbuster comedy that it's going to do well. So, is the
even
only...
Even though from what I've heard, A Million Ways to Die in the West is hysterical, you know? And mm-hmm. I haven't seen Tammy either, but Melissa McCarthy has fantastic comedy timing, as The Heat demonstrated, you know? And so, yeah, it's
well,
not
you would
these
know.
Films...
I don't know about The Heat.
Have you guys not seen The Heat?
I have. I thought it was great. Well, Mikey and I have this back and forth about he doesn't think Melissa McCarthy is really all that funny, and I think she's hilarious. Like, her comedic timing is just genius. I mean, she's really good at it.
But she just doesn't do it for me. I understand to a certain degree what she does comedically for people, but it typically does not work for me.
I think she's one of the best physical actors since Chris Farley.
I agree. I agree too.
I just hope it's not because, like, I hate women or something. I think
I think you always have a valid point because she does the Mike and Molly show, which is completely unfunny. But
I've never seen an episode. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've only seen bits and pieces, but it's all extremely forced sitcom humor, and it's not funny because it's not Melissa McCarthy being Melissa McCarthy. It's not her doing that physical comedy that really works in movies like Bridesmaids and, you know, obviously Tammy and, you know, all the other physical roles that she does. I think she's very Chris Farley like. So anyway, that's another.
Well, okay. So it brings me back to the question. What is it about 22 Jump Street and Neighbors that is different from A Million Ways to Die in the West and Tammy? I mean, like, Melissa McCarthy, whether I like her or not, she is, you know, very popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the dude's name. Seth MacFarlane?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seth MacFarlane is still pretty popular. I would say
it. And Ted was huge.
And Ted was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it? Is it just your movie needs to be funny? I mean, I saw A Million Ways to Die in the West, and, you know, it didn't hit on all the right beats, I think, but there were funny things in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what is the difference? Why are people going to see 22 Jump Street or Neighbors, which isn't a sequel,
right,
and they're not going to see A Million Ways to Die in the West? Is it just, unfortunately, it came out at a bad time?
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, is it word of mouth? Is it marketing? Does all a blockbuster comedy need, or a summer comedy need, is to be funny? Is that all it needs, or is there something more that we're missing?
Well, something to keep in mind is that 21 Jump Street, when it opened, it only made $36 million opening weekend, which is not, I mean, that's not huge. Tammy, how much did you say Tammy's made?
I think it's made like
21 or something.
Yeah, it was 20-something.
I mean, so that's nothing to sneeze at, and I guarantee you that wasn't that expensive.
Yeah.
22 Jump Street has the benefit of being a sequel to a film that gained a tremendous amount of momentum from word of mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, 21 Jump Street grossed in domestic $138 million.
Yeah.
So it got, after opening weekend, it went on to earn another over $100 million, which is, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it doesn't, yeah, you know, happen.
Ever. Mm-hmm. Almost always, it's whatever you make in your opening weekend sets the tone. So that's...
Unless you're frozen.
Unless you're frozen.
Well, yeah. Again, it happens, right? It mm-hmm. does happen, but it's not the norm.
It's not the norm.
So who knows? You know, maybe 3 months from now, we're all going to be back here talking about how we had to go see Tammy because it turned out to be the most hilarious comedy in all time. You know, probably not, but maybe.
Well, and that's the interesting thing, because it's not just that it's early,
mm-hmm.
And it couldn't pick up, but critically. Neighbors and, well, yeah, I guess you're right. Neighbors did open against nothing. Jared just pointed that out. But
A Million Ways to Die had a bad.
It did have a. It did place. Kind of have a.
It was.
Bad
it
place.
Was smashed in between a bunch of blockbusters, yeah. You know?
Well, 22 Jump Street, on the other hand. It's not. Tammy has like a. It's like a 20% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, it's a comedy. Mm-hmm. Comedies are going to get rated lower because comedies typically aren't concerned with making, like, high-quality films. They want to make you laugh, typically.
Right.
I wouldn't say that, like, you know, much like the thing J.R. was saying earlier. It's not the rule.
Right.
Or the absolute, but it is, you know, a trend.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but 22 Jump Street, I mean, it's trending around, like, 85% or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, critics like it, too. Critics are saying, this is a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
So what is 22 Jump Street doing?
Well, you're kind of asking two questions. We're still kind of on the...
Well, then answer them both.
I will try. well, I think What 22 Jump Street does perfectly is it knows exactly what type of movie it is and just does that really, really well. It's self-aware, and people, critics, really like self-aware stuff. I think, you know, something that knows what it's set out to do, does it really well. That's a solid movie. They're going to rate it well. Why people go see it, because we're still kind of on that question a little bit. I feel like I'm a good example. Because
I, do too.
I don't thanks. I'm a role model citizen. I don't go see comedies in the theater. I don't, because I don't see a whole lot of movies like every month. Like I don't see like, you know, four or five movies every month. I see like two, maybe three in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when I see a comedy, I'm like, that looks really funny. I don't necessarily need to see it on the big screen. I feel like I can't wait to see it, but I feel like I can wait to see it. You know, I feel like I can wait until it comes on Redbox or whatever. So, you know, for me, paying to go see a comedy is like I paid to go see 22 Jump Street in the theater because I knew exactly what to expect. I knew exactly what was going to be there for me because the first one was what it was. It was hilarious. It caught me off guard, and I knew going into it exactly what it was going to do, and it did it really well, and I knew it was going to do it really well. Well, I also really like certain types of humor and certain types of actors and certain types of a collection of actors and stuff, like Paul Rudd.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Paul Rudd in pretty much anything.
Yeah.
I like Jason Segel, and I like those guys when they do movies. So, like, when they did I Love You, Man, I had seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall before it. I'd seen, I think, Role Models came before it. And so I knew going into it that those two together were going to be really funny. And so I went and saw and paid to see I Love You, Man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rare that I, you know, see a comedy just on my own dollar. I'd rather save my money to go see something I feel like I need to see in the theater.
Yeah.
So if somebody, if you have to, like, I feel like nowadays people going to the theater, when they see something in the theater, it's because they feel like they need to see it in a theater rather than wait for it to be able to see it at home, because you got to understand the home viewing experience is so amazing now that it's, you know, not, you know, the theater is almost comparable, and then you have to, like, I got to put up with the people, like, on their cell phones and all this stuff, and you know, you have to go out in public, and I just watch it at home. So a comedy's really got to deliver exactly what you think it's going to deliver in order for you to not have to wait to go see it. Does that make sense?
No, it does.
Oh, absolutely. Y'all
were having this conversation on the side while I was talking. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I mean, I can tell that JR is way, way more used to Google Hangouts, where when he types things, everyone can see them. So instead, I'm the only one who gets to see them.
You're right, yeah.
So Mark gets to talk.
I apologize, Mark. I was trying to make you laugh and mess you up. That's what we do on Storymen. Yeah. We're really mean to each other.
So instead, I'm laughing at what JR's typing, and Mark's like, I'm trying to make a point here, right.
It's like, respect my authority, you guys.
These are my feelings. Don't worry, he was just talking about how you're a big loser for not.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so I said I'm a big loser because he moves all the time. I was like, go outside, man, get some friends.
Well, and I misunderstood JR. Either way, I was funny.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
you understand, like, my wife is the one that's like, we don't really need to see that in the theater. I'm like, I guess not. You know.
Laura's gotten really on board with going to see lots of movies in the theater now. Mm-hmm. Like, we enjoy the experience. It's something we do together. You know, we budget for it now, especially because of Real World Theology. We obviously had to budget for it so we could see enough stuff to keep doing the show.
Right.
The problem now is that because of this, it's starting to bring up that old issue that we had, because when we used to not go see many things, I was like, look, this has to, like Mark, like you were saying, it has to bring something to the table that makes me be like, I can't wait to watch this on my flat screen TV at home with surround sound.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be like Gravity. You know, where if you watch it at home, you miss the point.
That's another thing, like, with the same thing, like, with 3D. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm going to go see something in the theater, okay, I'm going to see it in the theater. But if I'm going to see something 3D, like, you understand, like, I'm paying, like, $350 extra per ticket. Mm-hmm. Like, it needs to be, like, seriously good. I knew Gravity was going to be that good, especially in 3D. So I saw it in 3D.
Oh yeah, same here. Yeah. I can't. It's like the only movie that I've ever seen in IMAX 3D that I was like, if you do not see it in IMAX 3D, you wasted your money.
Yeah.
Because you could have gone to see it anyway.
Yeah.
But so I'm totally on board with that. I'm totally on board with like there needs to be an experience like that. And unfortunately, I also can't think of a good reason most of the time to go see a comedy. This is why I mentioned earlier that we did go see The World's End, because I will go see almost anything Edgar Wright makes.
Yeah.
But not because it's a comedy, but because...
it's Edgar Wright.
Because it's Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was pleasantly surprised that even though we saw this in the theater, we laughed, we had a great experience. You know, there were enough people there, and when they all laughed, it gave an experience that I didn't think I was going to have. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, well, I can laugh in my basement watching a movie.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That made me sound like the Joker. I can just sit around.
Well, okay, so Mike, you said, you know, Edgar Wright's that guy for you. Mark, you were saying earlier, Paul Rudd, some of those guys, right?
Right.
For me, definitely... thanks to Lego Movie and 21 Jump Street, before I even saw 22 Jump Street, Phil Lord and Chris Miller have become that. I think those guys are incredible minds and phenomenal directors.
Well, I'm going to say I completely agree, JR. They have now made that list.
Yeah. I still haven't seen Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2. And
it's awful.
It's
awful.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Mm-hmm. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs was one of my surprisingly favorite animated movies.
Yeah, I love that first one.
And so I was so excited when the second one came out, and so I watched it, and I was literally bored for the first two-thirds of the movie.
Oh, that's too bad.
And...
well, all right.
Did they do that one, too? I didn't think they did the second one.
I didn't think they did the sequel.
I'll look it up.
I think that, yeah. Check that, because I think they just did the first one. The last third of Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2 was pretty entertaining. They kind of finally found the stride. And, you know, this is also personal opinion, but I was really... well, it's also critic reviews.
Yeah.
They thought it was pretty awful, too, but...
yeah, they did not do the second one.
Yeah.
They did not, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I was...
That explains a lot.
There you go.
So they're on my list. And furthermore, when I was reading a review of 22 Jump Street, I think someone made a pretty good comparison... and I realize for people who are fans of this comparison, or both sides of this comparison, I don't make this comparison lightly, but there was someone who compared what Phil Lord and Chris Miller are doing now, like via the Lego Movie, via 22, well, both the Jump Street movies, especially 22 Jump Street. They compared it to like kind of what Dan Harmon does on Community, kind of pushing that fourth wall of comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Being
yeah.
able to like take one step back from just the joke and make the entire thing be a bigger joke that, you know, is like meta and all that stuff. And I mean, that's probably why I enjoy it so much. But
I feel like people I don't feel like many people are drawn, or the mass public is drawn to meta humor. They're not, because I mean, you know, if they were, Community would have survived.
Yeah, Community is kind of surviving.
It's surviving, but I mean, like, it would have done a lot better. We would not be talking about it being
Community
canceled.
Would have thrived.
Yeah.
Thrived.
They're not thriving.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So we can have huge comedies. Maybe we could say that people go see 22 Jump Street because some people want to go and turn their brains off and just laugh. And other people saw it, and because of word of mouth, and it was highly recommended on top of that because its humor was so intelligent and clever.
Yeah, it's more hit or miss with comedies than it is with like big blockbusters. You know, I don't know why Edge of Tomorrow didn't do well, but you know, maybe it's just the summer movie season. You miss there every once in a while. But you know, I think with comedies, some of them do well, some of them don't, and then some of them, I think comedies have more of a life on home media entertainment than they do in movies. So because when you think about like, it's going back to like why I go see a movie, I have to see it on the big screen in the theater because. You know, with something like Edgar Wright, you know, we watched that brilliant, like, YouTube explanation of, like, you know, why Edgar Wright's so brilliant visually. You know, he's got a visual style that you want to see on the big screen. You want to get the full experience. Mm-hmm. But a lot of this stuff, as far as direction and cinematography, is just phoned in just to get the joke across. So, you know, comedies just don't, nowadays, just kind of don't, you know, inhibit that need to go see it now. But when you have a combination of things like what we're saying with like word of mouth, 22 Jump Street, how smart the first one was and surprised everybody. I mean, you've got that just built-in audience that wants to go see it now. So,
well, okay. So I want to do this. I want to kind of shift to talking specifically about the movie.
Okay.
And not just comments. Talking about our fourth wall of the movie. And so in doing this, I realized that when I left the theater, I had this Joss Whedon quote in my head, because everyone asked Joss Whedon, like, the Avengers was so awesome. How do you make Avengers 2 even better?
Mm-hmm.
Or how do you even approach Avengers 2? And it's not a verbatim quote, but he more or less said, in the sequel, you don't go bigger, you go deeper. And even though it's a comedy, I feel like that's what Phil Lord and Chris Miller did in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, you had a framework in 21 Jump Street, but part of that going deeper is analyzing the entire nature of a sequel,
mm-hmm.
and analyzing, or like going deeper in the relation, in all the relationships in this film, even though it's a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Am I alone in that?
Right.
Yes.
Oh, you're asking. That's
yes, you're alone. No, I'm yes, kidding. No. I agree with that. They definitely, it felt to me sort of like they retread a bunch of the same ground, but yeah, just took it to a deeper level a little bit. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and I think they had again that kind of free ticket to ride, you know, as with the R rating, and it's kind of like with, you know, taking it deeper, like you said, with the sequel type stuff of like, wow, this is just bigger. This, you know, Ice Cube goes into his office and he's like, it's bigger and more expensive for absolutely no reason at all. You know, it's like, it's a big ice cube in the middle of the room.
Oh, what did he say? He said, they figure if we just throw twice as much money at it, we'll have twice as much success.
Yeah. So, I mean, and with this movie, going deeper is kind of built in for them. Because if you're going to analyze the first one as a remake of an 80s TV show and how ridiculous that was, recycling old crap, you know, you're going to do that with the sequel and just kind of, it's going to naturally go deeper. Well, now you got to analyze. What they really did well was they analyzed, you know, the relationship between the two guys,
mm-hmm.
Which was a natural way to go with the sequel. But, you know, you had their captain again, Captain Ron Swanson.
Captain doesn't need a other name.
Yeah, he doesn't. You know, but you had him even explain the whole plot of their story arc at the beginning of the movie, you know, Edgar Wright style. You know, he was kind of like, you know, one of you is going to get clingy and the other one's going to want to go do their own thing. And it's like, I mean, it's kind of naturally built in. So it kind of made, I love that about the movie because, you know, it could just have been them just cracking jokes and going through the movie, but they actually really, you know, did the whole typical sequel story arc of the two, and they made it really pointedly funny because they mm-hmm. pointed it out and stuff like that. So I thought that was really great. And, you know, I really got this sense of just kind of what this movie did well was it did what a comedy does well. And there's a really great moment in the movie where when I saw the scene, I was like, that's what comedy is right there. Like when Schmidt and his love interest Maya were sitting on the bench in front of those two big stones, and she was like, I'm just really admiring, you know. And this is going on the theme of, like, the two of them and their, you know, Schmidt and Jinko's, like, relationship and stuff. But, you know, I just really like that, you know, they belong together, and it's a work of art, and it's, like, really commenting on, like, the actual piece of art. And then he goes, don't you just think it just looks like two big testicles? You know, and it's like,
they just explain comedy to us.
I was like, that's comedy. You have art and themes and everything along with dick jokes. I mean, you know, that's the essence of comedy. And so these movies, and I guess, you know, Phil Lord and Chris Miller do comedy the way it should be done. I mean, they understand that you got to make dick jokes around the thematics and around the art and just play with it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought that the movie did that really well. The essence of comedy, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree, like, the meta stuff worked so well for me. The other, like, big meta thing that they kept doing was making fun of how old they are.
You know? Yeah. Like,
which is so funny, right? Because that's a problem with movies about high school and college anyways, that they cast people who are in their mid-20s or whatever all the time. And you've got these two guys that are in their 30s, and they don't even try to hide it. They just totally run yeah. with it and into a joke.
Schmidt's
and it
becomes like, "Oh no, I'm 19. I'm totally 19." What do you mean?
I love my grandpa too.
So, but you know, the one thing that I thought was interesting that I don't know if I would say it bothered me necessarily, particularly in this film, though it's something I think I see a lot in our larger culture, is that, you know, a lot of the humor in the film that was not the meta humor, that was not the age humor, was from the homoerotic subtext between Schmidt and Janko, right? Like that they're basically dating, but they're not dating, and, you know, we should investigate other people and like all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is interesting, and I've seen this problem at least since the first Lord of the Rings movie came out and people talked about the ambiguously gay hobbits,
mm-hmm.
is that our culture doesn't have a category for close male friendships that are not gay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Men have to either basically be like shallow, you know, buddies or whatever, or they're basically gay. And there's no like, there's no category that we feel comfortable with, as evidenced by all of the awkward humor in 22 Jump Street, as evidenced by how people were making fun of how the hobbits were all gay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no like category of like, oh no, those are just two men who are close, who are intimate friends. You know, that we don't know how to do that as a culture. And so, you know, I saw a lot of complaining, I think fair criticism on the film for its, you know, homophobia or whatever, you know, basically using the fact that they're acting gay as the butt of a joke. But I think the bigger problem is that, again, we don't have any way for men to be friends, you know, in a way that's culturally acceptable.
Well,
so.
I think maybe I see it a little bit differently, because I think, yes, they played that for the humor, and maybe that was, you know, lazy or just maybe just a sign of our culture. But they bring it around in the end. I mean, they bring it around to, yes, you know, we're just friends, and they get to the kind of heart of the relationship eventually. You know, because I felt like at the end we really got a sense, in a funny way, but I mean, I really think they brought it home anyway.
Well, and you have this, right, like, in the whole film, it's bothering them that they're not the same. You know, they're those two twins that are repeating everything, and then they're trying to do it and totally failing. And then, you know, Janko meets the guy who's Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's son, who's the quarterback. You know, who they're the exact same, you know, and so they have what Schmidt and Janko wanted and didn't have. And then in the end, they're like, oh, actually, we're different, and that's good. Like, sure, there's a lot of good stuff in there, but in the middle of it all, the reason it was funny was because they were gay, but they weren't gay. You know what I mean?
Which is odd, because, like, you know, they really made a point in this movie, and I can't say that I've seen this in any of these kind of, like, male-centered comedies where, you know, Janko's character was kind of like, you know, hey, man, it's 2014. You can't call people, you know, the F-word anymore.
Yeah, even though Jonah Hill did that IRL.
Right,
yeah.
Right, out, right, yeah, which was just
not,
just
by the way,
luck.
not the four-letter F-word. Right,
right.
The three-letter F-word,
which I didn't know if I could say on the podcast.
Is it,
it's
1, 2, 3, 4. Or the six-letter F-word.
Yeah,
right.
Either one. Yeah.
Either version.
But, you know, I thought that was interesting that they were kind of like, this is 2014, you know, trying to be like, you can't do that and point that. I don't know that I've seen that in a comedy yet, and maybe it's something I haven't seen, or maybe we'll start seeing it more. But it was really interesting that they were trying to kind of modernize it, while at the same time, they were doing the debased humor that's kind of like, you know, spurs on that culture a lot.
Right.
So, I mean, like kind of that, you know, college humor, frat humor, where it's really kind of cruel and really kind of picks at your eccentricities and puts you into a box and stuff like that. So that stuff can be funny. I didn't think that they overdid it. I mean, I got it. And I was a little kind of like, okay, we, you know, move on, find another way to make this funny. And I think they found a lot of ways to make it funny. But, you know, it's interesting, though, like, where the buddy cop kind of comedy has gone over the years of the genre. And now it is, like you're saying, like, it all has that kind of like, oh, it's two guys together. They must be gay. You know.
Well, what I'm hoping, because one of the
things... let's make fun of them being gay because they're
not.
Well,
yeah, like, I love... I mean, it's just like I Love You, Man, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's right, played yeah. as romantic comedy, and mm-hmm. it's funny because it's not. Like, it's as though it's a bromantic comedy, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But even the word bromance, right? Like, any sort of close, intimate relationship between two males must be romantic in some way.
Yeah.
And we call it bromantic to sort of take the edge off or something. But we right. can't just say it's a friend, like, we can't just say that's a friendship or that's an intimate friendship or something like that.
Which, oddly enough, is what I Love You, Man does really well. Because,
right.
you know, and by the way, if anybody's listening to this, haven't seen I Love You, Man, please see I Love You, Man.
And then read it's the review really that I'll make Mark write about it.
Great. That'll be one of my reviews, yeah. But yeah, so I mean, like, I Love You, Man, just at the end, you know, and it's not giving anything away, but they're just like, I love you, man. And they're like, yeah, I love you too, bro. I love you, bro, Chacho. You know, like, they do this whole, like, really funny thing. But they actually really become, like, deep friends enough to say, I mean, how you know, faux pas is that in our culture for two guys mm-hmm. to say, I love you, man,
mm-hmm.
you know, without, you know, somebody pointing out a gay joke.
I mean, yep. especially in the particular culture of... like the perception of masculinity,
mm-hmm.
like there's like a long ranging scope, you know, it's cool for a man to tell a woman that, it's cool for, you know, a mom to tell a child that,
mm-hmm.
it's cool to tell for two women to tell each other that,
mm-hmm.
it's sometimes not seen as the most masculine thing you can do for like a father to tell his child that.
Right.
That, I mean, I think that's really unfortunate that that's even something mm-hmm. we don't get. I mean, that's what lots of movies are completely based around.
Yeah.
Like a dad not telling his kid he loves him. And so then you get to that end of the spectrum, and that's two dudes being able to be like, I love you,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. actually mean it. And I mean, I remember it took me a long time to get to that point because I grew up around a culture that, you know, men didn't say, I love you. Lots of times, not even to their wives.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I finally walked through that, I was like, wow, this is really freeing, and I really do love this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And when we push it back into 22 Jump Street, I kind of feel that even though they get a lot of that kind of, you know, some of that debauchery, some of that like homosexual humor, or those undertones, I still prefer them at least acknowledging it and then acknowledging that it doesn't have to be a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, I think they do that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, I like, even though I wish it didn't, that it didn't have to be so funny, I'm glad it's at least being addressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, like, in Lord of the Rings, I think they just kind of put it out there, but they never, I don't really think they, I think they tried to, you know, address the friendship part of, like, Frodo and Sam's love mm-hmm. in the middle of the film, but then the way they ended it was almost... So, I don't know, it almost seemed like the conclusion was, well, they're eventually going to become, you know, romantic
right.
because of it. Yeah, like Jared points out, they're jumping on the bed together. You right. know, like they're, yeah. you know, they're making googly eyes at the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
It's why, like, well, I just want a movie because I think two dudes... who are completely for each other and have this deep friendship is one of the most powerful things that is not tapped in our culture. Mm-hmm. And I think the only times we ever get to see guys in films who care for each other or are willing to sacrifice are like when we watch war movies.
Right.
I just don't think that's deep enough. I think that's a very, you know, it's like, well, oh yeah, well, I'd be willing to shoot a guy for you.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to take a bullet for you.
But the thing with like Frodo and Sam, I mean, I didn't read that at all. That the filmmakers were trying to go there in any way. So is that?
Oh no. I would not say they were trying to go there. Yeah. I would say that was the reaction that
okay.
nearly okay. everyone yeah. that I know had to seeing their relationship portrayed. It was like Mikey said, people were like, gosh, those guys are gay. Like yeah. any two men who act that intimate must have a sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, it's definitely a cultural thing. And I mean, like, you know, I think about the 22 Jump Street, and I was thinking about the scene where they're in the therapy session, and I think they were playing the joke maybe this is just me misremembering, or there was some homosexual humor in there, but it was more of like they were playing that scene to be like treating their friendship like a relationship. Not that it has to be like a relationship, but they were comparing the friendship and the way that they were acting more of just like it could have been any dating relationship. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I think if you really think about it, and I think this is what makes people uncomfortable, mm-hmm. I think friendships and romantic relationships share a great deal in common.
Right, yeah.
And so people have a hard time, you know, drawing that line, because people so associate sex mm-hmm. with like being in a relationship that if you say you're in a relationship, there also has to be sex tied to it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that should be the case at all. I mean, in a strong friendship, there should be like commitment, you know, there should be sacrifice. You know, there, like these things that
intimacy.
You would, intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but people, you know, like I said, I think sex is so inappropriately tied into what a relationship is that, you know, that's like they clump that in there when it's not. And that makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think, you know, funny enough, I think I thought they handled it well in 22 Jump Street because, you know, as much as they were trying to be like very outright with like this is 2014, like, you know, it is 2014, I would be offended if they were making fun of, you know, gay people and just kind of lambasting them, you know, and I don't think this, you know, people would have been offended, people would have not have seen the movie, I don't think it would have been as popular, so, you know.
Yeah, Blazing Saddles can't come out now.
Right. Yeah, Blazing Saddles cannot come out right now. But see,
they
Blazing's...
tried that with A Million Ways to Die in the West and it didn't go over.
Yeah. I doubt A Million Ways to Die in the West. I haven't seen it, but I doubt it was near as funny or near as smart as Blazing Saddles. But Blazing Saddles, you know, is pointedly being about stereotypes. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
You have a black sheriff. I mean, like, that was the whole point of that.
Yeah.
Was to point that out and say, this is, you know, this is the stereotype that you put them in, and we're gonna use that to be funny.
Well, the irony is, I think Blazing Saddles should work now,
right?
Because I think it was way smarter. I think comedy was in general smarter back then.
Oh yeah,
back in the day before I was born.
Back in my day,
yeah. So, you know, I think it was actually smart. Like, people expected it to be.
I had to
clever.
Walk 4 miles in the snow to rent Blazing Saddles.
That's right. But you know, like I said, I'm hoping that with comedy, the buddy cop movie or the two dudes, you know, it's something that is funny now, but it's at least being addressed. Mm-hmm. And I think humor, one of the beautiful things about humor is that it allows us to talk about things that we're way too uncomfortable having serious conversations about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I'm hoping that if we're using humor with like male relationships now, mm-hmm. that hopefully that's going to start translating into, and I'm not saying there's never been one, because I know there's been, you know, sure. I'm just saying on the whole, mm-hmm. we still don't see a lot of guys that are like really intimate friends, mm-hmm. And are just intimate friends, you know, not sexual.
Right.
And I'm hoping that because that we're dealing with it with humor now, that eventually we're going to see the dramas or, you know, just the really Oscar-worthy two dudes are just all about, you know, sacrificing for their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it not having to have those undertones.
Right.
That it's completely understandable that dudes can just be friends.
Yeah.
Like, you can have women just be friends.
Mm-hmm.
And not assume that they're gonna, you know,
mm-hmm.
have to be lesbians.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's changing.
Yeah. And you feel like that's changing, JR?
I can't say.
I think we're very, very slowly turning the corner towards
totally
that.
Totally agree.
Well, do you think that the fact that homosexuality in culture right now, or in American society, mm-hmm. is becoming more and more common, and I would say it's easily on the rise, and becoming, I would say, part of culture, acceptable.
More normalized.
Yeah, more normalized.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's actually hurting this image of dudes just being friends? Do you think, like, since people are more used to, you know, homosexuals, being well, like,
I wouldn't say that it hurts it. I would say that I would say that it doesn't do anything to move the conversation forward or backward, because it's the same. So it's the same basic problem whether homosexuality is normalized or not, in that we only have two categories of relationship. We have acquaintance and romantically involved, you know. And so you see this in the church all the time, where you know, men and women can't be friends, because if a man and a woman are friends, they obviously want to sleep together. You know, and so there's no category for like a man and a woman who just actually are friends. You know,
I mean, I would take it honestly. My initial reaction is I think it actually might be helping. So, and the reason why I say that is because anytime that you open up your culture to accept somebody that you disagree with on the majority as a whole, because you know we have not just people who say that they're Christian, but not just the church, you know, speaking out against homosexuals instead of homosexuality. You know, I think anytime that your culture is opening up to people who are different than or have a different set of ideals or different set of beliefs than the cultural majority, I think you're going to help any kind of relationship along that is different. You know, or that is not, hasn't been accepted before. I mean, I think it's easy to say culture is progressing. I don't know. I guess I'm not a philosopher in that sense or whatever. But you know, I think it is kind of progressing in that kind of area of relationships. Maybe, I don't know.
I would love to see more space like what I Love You Man created, what we see in 21 and 22 Jump Street. Where we can really seriously consider what intimate friendships look like, intimate, explicitly non-sexual friendships look like. You know, I have several of those in my life with both men and women that I deeply value. My wife has intimate friendships with both men and women that she deeply values, and that's considered weird, you know?
But I think it's necessary. Well, I think for to be healthy.
Yeah.
I think it's the gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
Dang, I just dropped
Jesus
that
card.
yeah, I think it's super important to understand, you know, as a from the Christian point of view, that having relationships with people who aren't Christians, who are of the same sex, who are of the opposite sex, and having them be personal and intimate and really engaging with each other is the gospel, is what you should be doing. And the fact that there is any kind of, you know, outward push to push anybody away for any reason, no matter what they believe, who they are, what they look like, that's not the gospel. That's not what Christ is.
Well, I'd say even more so, I think we were made to, like, with a desire to be known.
Yeah.
And people are scared. I mean, 'cause, you know, it's like one of those things, you're vulnerable. But you have to be vulnerable if you want to be known.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disappointing not to be known.
Yeah.
But, and as long as, I mean, you know, that's why, you know, people, I know there are medical reasons, so I don't want to make light of it, but, you know, that a lot of the reasons people are depressed is because no one knows them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they feel like they're the kid that is always picked on in class. Mm-hmm. You know, they're marginalized, no one cares about them, they're never noticed, they're invisible,
right?
You know, so I do think we're hitting on a lot of good stuff, and as always, we're running long.
Well, you know, I thought about just real quick to point out, I feel like we got that relationship in a big budget blockbuster too with Captain America and Bucky Barnes. There was a, I mean, obviously, you know, in the second Captain America, and spoilers for Captain America if you haven't seen the second Captain America, but I feel like, you know, they had to play him as the villain because that's where he came back as, but you saw in the end that Captain was ready to, you know, he's taking all the punches from Bucky because he wanted so badly to save Bucky, and so he basically, Captain was like, look, I'm going to die, but I'm going to be here for you to let you know that you're my friend, and I'm okay dying knowing that I have at least tried to save you.
But and while I don't disagree, I think that falls into my, like, the only time we ever see it is in like the, like a war metaphor.
Well, yeah.
You know, like a battle metaphor. Like, because that's still holding on to the masculinity part of...
Right. They're manly enough that they can be intimate friends and not have to have, you know... Yeah, that's a good observation.
But, like, I think it's there, and I think people want it. I do think that's why people love those things. I think it's one of the things that helps sell, you know, war movies or battle movies or fighting movies, you know? I think when people go see The Expendables 3, it's a bunch of dudes being like, I got your back. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, in a things are exploding, lots of, you know, it's obviously marketed differently, but ultimately, like, you know, in Predator, when, you know, Apollo Creed and Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, you know, do the
I saw, iconic, but, I guess I saw the Captain America Bucky Barnes thing as a little bit different than the Apollo Creed Arnold Schwarzenegger,
you know, flexing the muscles. Exactly. I can't believe I didn't even see that before.
Well, okay, so, you know, there's a couple more things we could say, and we will have a chance for final thoughts, but I wanted to give both you guys a chance to do your come on moments. That, you know, we all did really like this movie, but surely there was something that just stuck out to you. So, JR, what was your come on moment?
I didn't love the whole spring break bit, mainly because it felt tacked on to the end. I liked a lot of the elements of it, like Jonah Hill's fight with that actress was just out of control hilarious.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Channing Tatum not getting to drive the Ferrari. Like, there was a bunch of little bits of it that I was like, well, I mean, I understand they wanted this big final set piece and everything, and it's college, and you get a spring break thing in there, and I'm like, I got it. I got all of it. Like, I got it.
Yeah.
But it just didn't totally work for me. I didn't love it, and it did feel like kind of tacked on at the end. So that was kind of the biggest thing that left a sour taste in my mouth that I didn't love.
Yeah, I mean, I it was hard for me to pinpoint just thinking about like a specific moment, because I usually do have a specific moment, but this time I think you could tell this was a script that was written in haste for a sequel, and I was really impressed that they came out with an extremely funny movie out of it, but there were still times where the humor was just super forced, and, like, it just didn't work, and so there was times where I was like, oh, come on, you know, like, get there, you know, and I think, like, the first third of the movie really had some problems with the setup. Like, it was a very similar setup, obviously, to the first one, you know, purposefully.
Yeah.
But it stumbled along the way to kind of get going. And there was, like I said, I can't pinpoint a specific moment, but there was a couple times in there where I was like, come on, man. I mean, like, try a little harder, you know? Yeah. So,
well, I would say it's something, or mine wasn't like a specific moment, but I felt like at times when it stopped being like that fourth wall humor and it came down and said, oh gosh, we've spent like the last 15 or 20 minutes doing this really funny thing, but we've got to give you guys just like 5 minutes of getting our characters to the next place real quick. So here's 5 minutes of getting our characters to the next place. And then it was funny again.
Mm-hmm.
But those 5 minutes I thought stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
Like those couple different, you know, I think it happened, I would say, I think I remembered it two or three times, just being like, oh, like, I stopped being immersed in the film because I realized that they were changing gears to do this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's just because I see so many movies, like, I recognize some of these things, or I read enough about how movies are made that I'm looking for some of these things subconsciously, but it really stuck out to a movie that, like, I was laughing at through the whole thing. So I wanted them not to be there,
right.
Or I wanted them to be more natural. Maybe kind of like what Mark's saying. You could tell they had to write a sequel.
It was just clunky. You could see the seams, right?
Yeah. So I was
super
like,
clunky. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, this is obviously this part of the movie. We're getting ready to hit this next beat.
Yeah.
You know, which can be good and bad, but not to harp on that too long, because like I said, it was fairly minor for how good the movie ended up being.
Oh, absolutely.
So with, like I said, again, we all did really like the movie. So JR, your favorite part. Or maybe a couple favorite parts if you have
two things. Yeah, well, one of them's in the movie and one of them's not.
Okay.
So my favorite part in the movie was the whole gag with Ice Cube's daughter.
Yeah.
Like, every part of that. From when they first figure it out to when Channing Tatum figures it out.
Oh, like, man. That That's one of my favorite parts.
Die. Like, that was just out of control good. And a close second to that, that's still in the movie, was that first, probably the first 10-minute sequence that was just, like, meta joke after meta joke after meta joke, when they sit down with Ron Swanson and he's like, do the exact same thing, to when they come over and they're like, oh, we're across the street. Next year, we'll be back across the street next door. And they're like, easy, don't get cocky. And they walk in, they're like, it looks like a giant cube of, like, it was just, like, non-stop, like, meta joke after meta joke. And I was like, oh my gosh, this, like, this movie.
It already passed me. Yeah.
But no, the other, great. I mean, I assume one of you is going to mention the closing credits.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because that was...
They're brilliant.
Pure genius.
Brilliant, like, yeah.
I was dying. Like, dying.
You for guys another are going to medical school.
Yeah. I mean, oh my gosh. That was just a thing of beauty.
Oh. You know,
with the Seth Rogen replacing him.
Yes, yes.
Talking about, yeah. Like, man. Oh, every bit of that was hilarious. So...
I thought Ice Cube was hilarious. Like, he's usually just kind of, like, last movie was a bit part, and it was pointedly a bit part. Okay, this is that bit part that we need, you know. But, man, just him and his daughter and that whole thing, and Channing Tatum just being like... I mean, you know, there's something about, like, this movie and these, you know, types of movies where you have really good chemistry between the actors and stuff. Like, when they do something really natural, like Channing Tatum just busting out laughing, like, you tell... It's not forced all that much.
And then it goes just, on for like
it goes on for 10 minutes. He's like dancing. He's like, except for the captain. Oh my God. He's like, you gave him dap and everything too.
Yeah.
And it's just riotous. I mean, it's just, I was laughing so hard.
Oh, yeah.
All the meta humor, of course, is always funny. I just love the end credits. I love that, you know, he got to say something cool, literally. You know,
yeah.
When he threw the... We threw the grenade and blew the...
What did you say?
I said something cool. No, but like, what did you say? I said something cool.
Yeah. Oh.
That's great.
So I feel like basically JR just read like my favorite moment from
sorry,
my show
man.
Notes. No, it's good. I think that's it. Excellent, because we're all seeing the same things, you know? The end credits were amazing. They did kind of have me worried because I was like, was this mean we're not going to get 23 Jump Street? Because we already said...
Yeah, like, I know, right?
I was laughing and I was like, oh gosh.
Yeah, that's, oh no.
At this point, if Phil Lord and Chris Miller. Are going to attach themselves to it, I want to see as many as they're willing to make.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially if they
I will see 21 Jump Street Generations.
I'll see.
I'll see the one with Seth Rogen even.
Yeah, I will watch them, like Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill, be 50 playing 30-year-olds. You know, they'll still make it funny. You know, and oh gosh, when Channing Tatum like was running around the ice cube, oh gosh, I really did lose it. I was laughing so hard. I think there was a tear.
Just the fact that they put Ice Cube in an ice cube is just great.
Meta. So, that's the thing that I think one of my favorite things about this movie, if I want to change it up kind of a little bit from what you guys said, is that I kind of like Channing Tatum now. Because I think I really didn't like him when he was being cast as the reason, like, ladies like Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
So
the stereotypical, like, meathead, hunk action figure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, but then I saw him in This Is the End last year when he kind of, you know, obviously had to sign on to make fun of himself, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And This Is the End is a lot more crude than this movie, so I don't necessarily recommend it to a whole lot of people.
Yeah.
But, you know, he made fun of, and so he finally, he turned that corner that Justin Timberlake turned for me,
mm-hmm.
when Justin Timberlake started like being on Saturday Night Live and was like, hey, look, I know why I'm popular,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to make fun of that,
mm-hmm.
and I'm cool with that.
Yep.
And so Channing Tatum turned that corner. You know, he's making 21 Jump Street, and he's making 22 now, and he's completely embracing the fact, like, why people think he's funny.
Yeah.
Or, well, you know, why people like him in the first place.
And that goes back to, like, why the critics like the movie, because self-deprecation goes a long way with, like, a lot of people. Like, if you're going to make fun of yourself, there's really no way you can dislike that, you know? Like, unless you're doing it in, like, a I'm actually really awesome kind of way, you know, which I think has been done. But, like, when you start to get into self-deprecation, like, I remember my dad, actually, to kind of throw this way back, talking about... not Tom Selleck, Deliverance guy.
Ned Beatty?
No.
Phil, Burt Russell.
Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds.
Yes, that's how much we know about 70s actors. But he used to talk about how he used to be so funny because he would go on Johnny Carson and just make fun of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always, that stuck with me of like, hey, people like self-deprecation a lot. And
yeah, Norm MacDonald. Speaking of Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, right. But it's, you know, this movie does it real well, and Channing Tatum is doing it really well right now. So it actually makes me want to see him in non comedic roles, even though that's primarily where I like Channing Tatum right now.
Even if he gets cast in that role and that movie gets mostly made and then that movie gets moved from July to next February or whatever.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And I get really this huge hole in my schedule now.
But I really believe, you guys, that Channing Tatum is the victim of his own exceptional good looks.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like a meathead and he gets played as a meathead, but I think he's got a lot more going on than he gets credit for.
He also started out as a crappy actor. Like, he was awful in some of the first stuff that he was doing, and it was phoned in, and really, and some of it was really
Step
poorly.
Up? What is wrong with Step Up?
Yeah. Oh, let me count the ways. I'll do a dance
Tatum's
number.
Anywhere near the top of that list.
Oh, man.
Depends on who you ask.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask.
No.
I want to talk to the person who says, you know what? Step Up is the movie of our generation, but for Channing Tatum.
But for Channing Tatum.
I want to meet that person.
That was the reason. All these other people. So good. This plot.
The
so
plot
good.
Is gripping. Just
fantastic.
Oh, see, this is what happens. Like, you know, I go to an art college, basically. UNC, you know, University of North Carolina Greensboro is liberal arts. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about dance, performance, design, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that's why going, and so many girls were like, Step Up is the best movie.
Mm.
You know, you try to find a date and you can't go anywhere without like having to go watch Step Up. And I was like, is that worth it?
Is it worth it?
Is being in an intimate relationship worth this movie?
It's like, have you just not ever seen another movie? Is that why you like it so much? Like, do you think they're a new thing?
You're just excited to see people
on majors?
Film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, anyway, JR, any final thoughts on the film itself?
No, I mean, obviously I loved it. Amanda, my wife, loved it. Our housemate Jesse loved it. We can't wait for the next one. And I'm going to go see everything that Lord and Miller do. They're my new heroes.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I forgot one of my favorite parts was when they were being chased and they ran through all the expensive stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much expensive stuff in there.
It's like
they're aiming for it. I'm trying to hit them. Oh, it was just great. I mean, it is one of those movies that's like, it's kind of stupid humor, you know, kind of, you can kind of throw it in there. There's some smart stuff to it with the meta stuff, but, you know, it's just a really fun comedy to zone out to. You know what you're getting into with this movie, and they do it so well, which is just refreshing. You know, they could have been botched, it could have been just another, 21 could have been just another 80s thing, and it could have just faded out, but I don't know. I'm interested in what you guys, because I know kind of Mikey's background with this, but JR, I'm interested in, like, you know, like, what is your epitome of, like, good comedy movie? Like, you know, there's all different types of comedy movies. You know, you've got World's End to, you know, the Hot Tub Time Machine, 22 Jump Street. You got all different levels, Wet Hot American Summer. But, like, what is it that's, like, man, that's my comedy movie I can watch over and over and over?
My two favorite comedies of all time are Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie, which I saw approximately 17 million times in college.
Roughly.
Yeah, approximate. And Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I mean,
okay.
Those are huge. In a more, like, I guess on a more serious note, in comedy, I don't know, that didn't make any sense. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou was my other favorite. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And again, what I love about that is it's got so many layers, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
You can watch it at just what's going on in the film, and it's funny. But then if you kind of dig into how it's basically retelling the Odyssey, you know, it's mm-hmm. just brilliant, 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 brilliant. And the more you know about it, and the more time you give to it, and the more times you watch it, the more hilarious it gets. Also, I would say that one of the best comedies that's come out in the last decade is Seven Psychopaths. Have you guys seen that?
Really?
Huh.
I have not. But that's,
oh my gosh,
that's,
you guys, put it at the top of your list.
Did you really like In Bruges?
I did not see In Bruges until after I saw Seven Psychopaths, and I enjoyed In Bruges well enough, but I'm telling you, like, I couldn't breathe in Seven Psychopaths. It is so dark and funny. Like, yeah. Hilarious. It was so funny. Like, we went and saw that movie as my wife and me, our housemate Jesse, and our friend Mo and his girlfriend. And she, his girlfriend did not like it at all. Mo and Jesse and I were, like, cackling and weeping and taking asthma inhalers because we were laughing so hard. And Amanda was, like, embarrassed because we were laughing so hard and no one else in the theater thought it was funny. Like, it was, like, silent. And so she was like, oh, gosh, like, everyone hates this movie except these three yahoos. So she's been able to enjoy it since she was not watching it in the theater. But, man, like, it is out of control funny and in a really smart, really dark, but really hilarious way.
Well, yeah, In Bruges is like that. I mean, I've seen In Bruges a couple of times, and it's really funny, but it's just super, super, like, dark and depressing kind of funny, you know?
This isn't so depressing. It's not as depressing as In Bruges, but it's definitely still, like, a dark comedy for sure. Yeah.
So, and I'm probably going to categorize this very crudely, but you seem to, like, your choices was, like, the kind of meta, very smart, kind of dark kind of comedy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Right? I mean, so, I don't mind. I'll watch a dumb comedy, right?
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll watch anything, like, that's right. A comedy. I shamelessly go towards the, like, just really kind of, like, crude humor and really just smart crude humor, like Role Models and David Wayne.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, so that's my kind of, like, you know, lots of dick jokes, but lots of, like, really funny meta type stuff as well. So, like, you know, you got Role Models is one of my favorites. And I think Mikey and I agree kind of one of our top, I'll watch it anytime, any day, is Dodgeball.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, like, that's it. I find comedies are great because there's so many different types of comedy.
Yep.
You know, like, when you get into something like drama or sci-fi, I mean, you get different types of sci-fi, different types of drama. But they're not as, like, you know, drama, if you change the drama to something else, it's more of, like, it's a different type of movie. But, like, there's so many different types of comedy that I just find that. So I wanted to know what to, and I probably could have guessed that was your type. I like your style, I like your writing, and I read your blog a lot. So I like your kind of style, so I was interested.
Well, yeah, we need to talk after you see Seven Psychopaths.
Okay.
We can all do that. I was going to say, speaking of David Wayne, we just watched they Came Together. It was great.
Oh, the new David Wayne movie is just came out recently. It's called They Came Together. It's really, really funny.
I'll have to watch that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Christopher Maloney. I don't know why he ever does drama.
I know.
He is seriously one of the funniest people on the planet. He's in.
Are you a fan of Wet Hot American Summer?
I have not seen that.
Oh, man.
I'll put it on my list.
Well, fair warning. It's different.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that.
That's fine. I'm not scared.
It's one of those that's like you watch it the first time, you need to watch it again. You know?
Every time you watch it.
Every time you watch it, it'll just get funnier and funnier and funnier.
Awesome.
Especially speaking of who's in it.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll kind of leave us with this. I do want to point out, like most things, you know, this is a rated R movie, so I know people who listen to the podcast have different sensibilities.
Indeed.
But I'm also assuming that if you've you're listening to this, you did see the movie already.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's lots of language, but in general, the crude humor, I think, is, except for the, you know, the homophobic kind of undertones, I think I was surprised at the lack of crude humor. And most importantly, I think it's important for everyone to laugh.
It is.
The Bible even says a joyful heart is a good medicine.
Jesus wants you to watch 22 Jump Street. That's what I just said. I heard it here.
Amen, brother. Preach it.
I wanted to give you guys a chance to kind of, you know, pimp your own stuff. So, JR, how can people find what you're doing in the world and on the internet?
Yeah, I blog at norvillerogers.com, and that's N-O-R-V-I-L-L-E, rogers.com. And I have two podcasts. I'm on The Storymen with Matt Michalotis and Clay Morgan, And I'm also on a new podcast called Origami Elephants with a woman named Bryn Lewis. Storyman is like history, pop culture, theology. If you like real world theology, you almost certainly you'll like Storyman. And Origami Elephants is a podcast where we take contemporary, like, you know, just as in the newspaper or on the blogosphere yesterday issues and use them to talk about theology and religion and philosophy and stuff. So if you like a little bit more heady current topics that are pretty awkward
cool
to talk about, that's Origami Elephants. So, and you can find all that stuff at noralrogers.com. So
hey,
I'm on Twitter and Facebook and all that.
Sign me up for that. That sounds really interesting. I'd like that.
It's been fun. We're three episodes in, and it's really fun. So
it's great. For me, as usual, I'm on here a lot, so I feel like if you're a regular listener, you already know my spiel. But I am on Twitter. You can follow me, Mark Wingdinger. And then I'm writing on Real World Theology more and more.
Maybe?
Yeah. No, I have something coming out in probably next week. Check that out. I have a review series that I'm adding to this time with The Prestige. So check that out, my review of that. I'm a writer, so I write behind the scenes a lot and working on some scripts. But find me on Twitter. Find me on Real World for now. And I'll see you in the internetosphere.
Internetosphere. Well, to everyone out there, thanks so much for joining us this episode. If you want to keep the discussion going, please follow at Real World Theo on Twitter. Or if you'd like to know more about Real World Theology specifically, visit our website, realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L, worldtheology.com, which you've probably already found because you found the podcast. Contact us through Facebook, subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or Stitcher. And if you enjoyed it, review the show, leave us some feedback, tell your friends, and let's get more people involved. On that note about feedback, I want to send a big thank you out to Let There Be Movies, who reviewed the show. Also, Ronan X13, who gave us a 5-star review and said, if you want to be entertained and made to think deep thoughts all within seconds, then this is the podcast for you. You'll laugh and cry and contemplate the cosmos. Great deep, job. Love the podcast.
Deep thoughts.
Yeah.
With Jack Handy.
That's like, I'm assuming this guy was listening to some other podcast, but I'm glad he got confused and reviewed our podcast. So,
didn't contemplate any cosmos tonight. I feel sorry. Who is that? What was that user's name?
Ronan X13. You need
sorry,
some,
Ronan, man. Like, I'm dragging the show down.
JR's fault.
Yes.
JR.
So thank you, everyone who is listening. Thanks for taking time to make us part of your week. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful, entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Adios.
This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.